chapter. I just say a few words about Eisenstadt. Eisenstadt is known in the Torah literature because of several of the Gedolim who lived here. In the late 1600s, the Shach lived in Vilna. Remember when we were touring Vilna, the tour guide kept on talking about the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon. So somebody asked the tour guide, what about the Shach? Where did the Shach live in Vilna? So they said, no, the Shach was not a rabbi. He taught secular studies. That is not correct. The Shach is quoted much more often than the Vilna Gaon is in halachic literature. Anyway, the Shach lived in Vilna in the late 1600s, and the Gzeres Tach V'Tach was 1648-1649. That's when they had the Chmelnytsky riots. That's when the Shach and the Chacham Tzvi and many others had to flee Vilna because they were out to kill everybody. So the chaver of the Shach was Rabbi Ephraim HaKoyen, who lived in Vilna, who was a Talmud of the Chelkas Mechoykek. Chelkas Mechoykek is the standard commentary on the side of the big Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra. So he was a generation older than the Shach. So this Rabbi Ephraim HaKoyen was a chaver of the Shach, and due to various Gilgulim, it turned out that he came here to Eisenstadt, and he lived there for quite a while. He wrote Shadus Tshuva, Shar Ephraim. He was not a Hungarian, he was from Vilna, but he was a prominent poisik years ago. Now, hardly anybody ever looks in the Shar Ephraim, but years ago he was one of the prominent poskim. Then the Shach had a sister who also ran away. They're not sure exactly what her name was. Also ran away from the Gzeres, the Chmelnytsky riots. And she had a grandson whose name was Meir. And he wrote the famous Svarim Ponim Meiris, because his name was Meir, so that's why he called the Sefer Ponim. The Shach's father was Reb Meir, so he was named after the great-grandfather. The Ponim Meiris was a prominent Paisik. He was already, the Shar Ephraim was in the late 1600s. He was the same generation as the Shach. And this Ponim Meiris was already in the 1700s, but he was accepted as a major Paisik at that time. He's still quoted now also, still people. What's unusual about the Ponim Meiris was that he had a yeshiva and he taught Gemara, like many of the Rabbanim. And he gave shiurim on Kachim. There was a while that he gave shiurim on Kachim, which is very unusual. Usually in yeshivas, they learn Noshim and Zikim and the Litvish yeshivas, so they learn Chulin, Brachas, whatever. But to give shiurim on Kachim is very unusual. But that was the generation. He was using the Sefer Birchas HaZevach. Birchas HaZevach was also the same time as the Shach. Birchas HaZevach is a Sefer by Rabbi Shmuel Aaron Kaidenover. And it's all on Kachim. When the Chafetz Chaim encouraged everyone to start learning Kachim, we should prepare for the coming of Mashiach and the building of the Beis HaMikdash and Akrabas HaKrabanis. The Chafetz Chaim reprinted several Svarim on Kachim. One of them was the Birchas HaZevach. So the Pani Meiris used the Birchas HaZevach, and he gave shurim. He sometimes agreed, sometimes disagreed, but that was what was unusual about him, that he gave shiurim on the Seder Kachin, and he published this shiurim. In the late 1700s, there was one of the great Gaonim of all generations, was Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was born here in Eisenstadt, and then he served as a Rav in Posen. Posen is where? That's in Austria, Germany, I'm not sure where it is.
It's on the border of Poland.
But it's, he was born in Hungary, and he had a rabbanis by the Ekis. And the Chassam Sefer, who was his son-in-law, was just Faket. Chassam Sefer was born and brought up in Frankfurt. He was a Yekke. And he often signs many of his tshuvas, Moshe HaKotten in Frankfurt. He's proud of the fact that he was brought up in Frankfurt. And for many years, he wanted to move back to Frankfurt. Didn't turn out like that. And then later on, he served as a Rav in Hungary. So it was just the reverse for Rabbi Kivei. Rabbi Kivei goes in Ungarische, who had a Yekishe Rabbanus. And the Chassam Sefer, his son-in-law, was a Yekke who had an Ungarische Rabbanus.
Contemporaries, father and son-in-law, like a marriage.
So I think the first wife died, he had no children. Then the second wife was the daughter of Rebbe Kiviger, and he had all the children from her. And after she passed away, then he married a third wife. They say a story about Rebbe Kiviger that was such a holy tzaddik, he didn't look at women. Probably above a meister. So he once came to visit the Chassam Sefer, but he didn't realize that his daughter had died and the Chassam Sefer had married someone else. So he didn't look at the woman, so he kept on referring to her as his daughter. His daughter had passed away, they never told him. It's probably above a meister. They have another above a meister, they say, that when the Shach ran away from Vilna, so through different Gilgulim, it was in this part of the world. And he was once at an inn, and he was sitting and learning there. So the girl who was the maid, or the waitress, whatever, in the inn, heard the way he was singing a niggun, and she started to cry. So she said that reminds her of her brother. So he said, "Who was your brother?" So she said, "My brother's name was Shepsi Hakain." She didn't realize that was her brother. Sounds far-fetched. That's terrific. And in fact, the Rambam in Shulchan Aruch quotes very often in Hagim. So he quotes from three different Sfarim. He quotes from the Maharil Alad and from Rabbi Avram Klausner and from Rabbi Isaac Tirnit. And Rabbi Isaac Tirnit, they're not sure exactly, but they think that he lived in Hungary in the city Tirnit. There's more than one Tirnit in Europe, but he thinks because he writes about what the minhag was in Hungary. Apparently he lived here. He lived in the 1400s. And there are more quotes, a lot of minhagim from him. Minhagim, whether you do say tachnun, you don't say tachnun, you know, from the shas above, whether you say piyutim, this piyut, the other piyut, this sleep, and the other sleep, and so on. And in fact, there's one famous din that the Ramah had, a minik, you can call it a din or a minik, whatever, that the Ramah quotes of Shulchan Aruch that's highly debatable, from Rabbi Isaac Tirna. The Gemara in Bamem Adlikin has a discussion that runs as follows. On Chalamai, we don't say, we read Kriyas HaTaira, but we don't say Avtaira. On Yontif and Shabbos, we have Avtaira. On Chalamai, when it's not Shabbos, not Yontif, we don't say Avtaira. So what if it's Shabbos Chalamai? So do you say in the concluding bracha, is Al HaTaira Ve'al HaVayda Ve'Yom HaShabbos Chazer? Do you say Yom Chag HaMatzah Zazer, Yom Chag HaSukkah Zazer, or not? Because in Tam Chalamai, you wouldn't have had Avtaira. The only reason why you have Avtaira is when it's a Shabbos. So it's a discussion in the Machlekes in the Gemara of Bema Mavlik. And the Gemara comes to a conclusion, and there's a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos what the conclusion is. So the minig that's recorded by the Ramah comes from Rabbi Isaac Tirna. He claims that the minig is that we make a compromise between Shabbos Chalamai Pesach and Shabbos Chalamai Sukkos. Shabbos Chalamai Sukkos, we do mention Chagas Sukkos in addition to mentioning Shabbos. Shabbos Chalamai Pesach, we don't mention. What's the logic behind it? So he quotes Rabbi Isaac Tirna in the Minhagim, quotes from the Gemara. The Gemara says that there's a distinction between Chalamai Pesach and Chalamai Sukkos with respect to reciting Hallel. That every day of Sukkos we say Gans Hallel, as opposed to Pesach, when you only say Gans Hallel the first day or the first 2 days, and Chutz Lartz, and the rest of Pesach you only say Chatz Hallel. So the Gemara says, why is there a discrepancy? So the Gemara says, because on Sukkot every day you brought different korbanos. The Torah has a separate parasha, b'yom hasheni, b'yom hashlishi, b'yom harvi. Every day is a separate, every day of Sukkot is a separate kedushas hayom, a separate kedushas Sukkot. Because every day in Parshas Pinchas has its own parsha. So every day has a separate chi of simcha, every day has a separate chi of alo. But on Pesach it says, kochet asala yom shivas yomim. It's one long kedusha that extends for 7 days. So once you've already said halal on the first day, so there's no need to repeat halal the rest of the days of Pesach. So that's what we assume, that halal the rest of Pesach is only a minhag. It's not bedin in the Gemara, you're not mechuyev to say halal. So Rabbi Isaac Tirna applies this with respect to when you recite the Haftarah on Shabbos Chalamai Pesach, Shabbos Chalamai Sukkos, he says that since Sukkos is Chaluk and the Karban Hashem, every day bring a different Karban. So therefore, we don't understand what's the therefore. Therefore, you should mention Sukkos and Shabbos Chalamai Sukkos, and Pesach you don't have to mention. So the Vilna Gaon says the whole thing doesn't make any sense. The Gemara had two opinions. There was a Machlekes Rashi and Tosfos. And nobody, not in the Gemara, not in the Rishon, nobody came up with such a difference between Pesach and Sukkot, and Chalukah and Mekarpin the same only makes sense with respect to Hallel. Every day Sukkot is a separate Yontav, a separate Parsha, B'yom HaSheni, B'yom HaShlishi, B'yom Arvi. Every day has a separate Chiyav Hallel, separate Chiyav Simcha, HaSheni and Pesach. It's one long Yontav that lasts the 7 days. But as far as this issue, whether you mention Yontif in the bracha of the Haftarah, why should it make a difference whether Chalukah and Mekarpin the same or not? So that's why in all the Sefer it's printed like the Rambam says, and the Vilna Gaon says that it's a mistake. That since on Pesach we don't mention Pesach, on Sukkot also you should mention. I remember once I was out of town on Sukkot, so Shabbos Chalamot Sukkot, they were going to give somebody Maftir. So the Rosh Yeshiva, I happen to be in Schneider's Yeshiva in London, it doesn't exist anymore. So the Rosh Yeshiva walked over to the one who was going to get Maftir, and he said, "You don't say what it says in the Siddur, you say like in the regular Shabbos. You shouldn't mention Sukkot." So the one who was going to get Maftir was afraid to go against the Siddur. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, "Okay, so I'll take Maftir. I'm not afraid of the Pritta. I want to follow the Vilna Gaon." That's a problem. Isaac Tirna writes all of the minhagim. He writes also, this was the minhag for many, many years, that on Chalamot you put on tefillin with a bracha. And then in Shulchan Aruch, the Taz says, the Rama says, the Chazan usually used to recite the bracha on the talis and tefillin out loud. So on Chalamot, the Rama recommends that Chazan should say the bracha on the tefillin softly, because just like there's an isa to say a bracha levatola, there's an isa to say a bracha Amen. So the Rama recommends that the Chazan should say the bracha on the tefillin softly. The Taz says, "What do you mean? But if you're concerned that it may be a bracha levatala, so no one should say the bracha." So that's the common meaning. By the Yekis, they still follow what it says in Shulchan Aruch that everybody says a bracha. Rabbi Kivega was not Ungarish, but he lived by the Yekis. So he said a bracha on the tefillin. In the collection of letters of Rabbi Kivager, his grandson, Leibel Eger, who was a Siddish Rebbe, used to write, correspond with his uncle, Rabbi Kivager's son-in-law, his name was Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum. Did he tell him more things about his grandfather? So he wrote, they used to correspond, he used to write different hanhagas. So Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum was a chassid, and Rabbi Kivager was a misnagid. So he writes, the first time he visited his in-laws for Yontif, so his father-in-law made him put on tefillin on Chalamot, because everybody in Shul put on tefillin. So he says he was ready to choke. He was a chassid, he never wore tefillin on Chalamot. But he says at least his father-in-law, Rabbi Kivager, was nice enough not to force him to say a bracha. Because the people in Shul are not going to know what they say in a bracha now. Just see if he's not wearing tefillin. So his father-in-law was kind enough to let him put on tefillin without him. So by the Yekas, they still have the practice like that. They put on tefillin chalamot with a bracha. That says in Rabbi Isaac Tirna's Minhagim. That's what he writes. And most people who put on tefillin chalamot put on without a bracha. But the Sefer Minhagim, Rabbi Isaac Tirna, is one of the three fundamental sources for Minhagim that the Rambam relies on. He relies on the Ma'ariel and Rabbi Abram Klausner, who is the Rebbe of Rabbi Isaac Tirna, and Rabbi Isaac Tirna, Minhagim, Sefer Minhagim, Rabbi Isaac Tirna. I spoke before at the city of Eisenstadt about Rameir Eisenstadt, who was the grandson of the Shach's sister. He was in Eisenstadt at the end of his life, but originally he came from Poland. He was originally in, his family originally came from Vilna. When he had a yeshiva in Poland, one of his most outstanding students was Rabbi Yonis and Abishitz. That does mean that he was greater than Rabbi Yonis and Abishitz, but if he had such a student, he must have been somebody very big. He's known in Halacha, he's known for the following. Usually when you write a get, you have to write the name of the city where the get is given. Let's say the get is given in New York. So you identify which New York, the different New York. So you write New York. Masa di Asfal Kef Yama on the Har Hudson. That the city of New York is located on the ocean and on the Hudson River. You always identify, that's how they used to identify cities years ago. A city would always be built near a river and near a, they had to have a form of transportation. Now we have trains, now we have buses, now, so you don't really need any river to have any transportation. But that's the way it used to be years ago. So the minhag was for many years, you wouldn't write a get in a city that didn't have a river or a lake to identify. So he was the one who changed that. That when he said there's no such halacha that you can't write a get. If the city is located on a river, on a lake, or on an ocean, then you would write that to identify which city you're talking about. But if the city has a name of a city and is not located, no lake, no ocean, no rivers, a nisht is nisht. So that was considered a big breakthrough at that time. Now it's a double portion like that. A lot of cities have no rivers next to them. But at that time, that was considered a big chiddush. There were those who disagreed with him, but his position was accepted. He lived in the early 1700s. As I said, he was a grandson of the sister of the Shach. So at that time, they were fighting Shabtai Tzvi followers. Shabtai Tzvi followers. Shabtai Tzvi was very into Kabbalah, and he tried to convince everybody that he was Moshiach, and then they pressured him until they converted him to Islam. It was a whole scandal. So he was very involved in he was waging a battle against the followers of Shabtai Tzvi. Many of them, based on Kabbalah, were dressed in white on Shabbos and Yom Tov, like you have a lot of people in Eretz Yisrael, say that they're following Kabbalah and dressing in white. So he was very opposed to that, because what happened with Shabtai Tzvi? You don't have to look for trouble. He was the one who was instrumental. We saw there in Eisenstadt that there was the big chain at the beginning of the Jewish sections. He was, that's how they quote in the Sifrei Halacha, he was the one who was instrumental in closing off the Jewish section from the city, that the Goyim shouldn't be able to come in the middle, even though the Jewish section was right in the middle of the city. He was, they quote in the Svarim that he instituted, he was very upset why there's so much of a mingling in the men and the women after davening on Shabbos morning, so he instituted that after Anim Smiris, the women should leave right away, and only the men stayed for Adon Olam, and then the women would go home already, so there shouldn't be any, shouldn't carry on any conversations with each other, not the comely day, chet. I don't know. Today, we think that it's a good thing, but at that time he felt that it wasn't a smart idea. It happened to Swarm also that when he for some reason or another the Masa to the government that he said something against the government, so he had to leave the city, and finally they convinced the government that he lived in Vienna for a while, then he came back. So he composed a Yehiratzen that they used to say every Shabbos after Kriyas HaTorah, that we should all be nitzel, that the government should never give us a hard time. So they write in this one that they had this practice till the beginning of the Second World War. They still continued to say his the Yehiratzen that he composed. Mentioned about Rabbi Akiva Eger, it's interesting. I mentioned we were talking before the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer's second wife was a daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. So the children once went to visit Rabbi Akiva Eger. So Chassam Sofer, they had to travel to visit. So the Chassam Sofer told them, I think I mentioned it before, when they go to visit the grandfather, they should take note of his Chassidus and Precious and Kedusha. Tahara and Zira Shemaim and so on. So the children asked the father, the Chassam Sofer, I forgot to mention, we should pick up and learning from him. So he said, no, learning you should learn from me, not from Rabbi Akiva Eger, because they had a different style of learning. The Chassam Sofer was born and brought up in Frankfurt, and his two rabbeim were Rabbi Nosson Adler, not to be confused with Rabbi Nathan Adler, who was later in the days of Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. Rabbi Nathan Adler was a chief rabbi in England. He's also a Talmud Chacham, but that's not the same as Rabbi Nosson Adler, the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, who was the early 1800s. So Rabbi Nosson Adler was a Goyin HaGoyinim, And his other Rebbe was the Haplor, who was the Rav in Frankfurt. So, the Chasam Sofer was brought up by these two Goyim, and he had their Derech HaLimud. It was one style of learning. It's not really the generally accepted style today in the yeshivas. It's a different style. They're bothered sometimes with Akasha, and then they'll interpret the Gemara that all the Tanaim and all Amoraim are bothered with their Akasha, and the whole sugya revolves about their Akasha, something that's not even mentioned in the Gemara. Rabbi Kiveger had a different style of learning. He had learned, he picked up his Derech HaLimud in Hungary. He was born in Eisenstadt. They said, they write in the books, in the history books, who his Rebbe was. It didn't ring a bell by me, I never heard of the name. But Rabbi Kiveger's style of learning is the generally accepted style that they use today in all of the yeshivas. So it's interesting that the Chasam Sofer said that children should pick up all the Yerushalayim from the grandfather, but the learning they should pick up from him, not from the grandfather. And today, the style of learning of Rabbi Kiveger is more popular, more accepted than that style of the Chasam Sofer. Rabbi Kiveger wrote many, many tshuvas. He's known for his tshuvas, and he's known many, many chidushim and halacha. We just had the Tisha B'Av. So the practice always was for many generations that on a tiny tzibur, when you're laying to mincha, so you're laying by chal, you give three aliyahs, then you say chatzi kaddish, then the one who got shlishi says the haftarah. So Rabbi Kiveger did away with that practice based on a Magen Avraham. The Gemara says, "I'm after Benavi, Tzorach Shikra Batora Tchilo." The one who gets the Haftorah has to lay an Aliyah. People shouldn't think that the reading of the Haftorah, the reading of the Navi, is just as significant, just as important as the reading from the Sefer Torah. So the one who's going to say the Haftorah from the Navi has to lay from the Sefer Torah. Also, everyone should demonstrate the Kriya from the Sefer Torah is the most important thing. So the Magen Avraham says, if you're going to say Kaddish in between the Aliyah and the Haftarah, or in some shuls they say Long Mishaberach for the Medina, in between the Kriya of the Maftir and the Kriya of the Haftarah. So that's not right. You're not supposed to have such a long pause. You have Chatzi Kaddish after Shvi, after all the Aliyahs are over, before Maftir, but you don't have such. You say a brief Mishaberach, okay, but you don't make a long Hafsak, you don't make a long pause in between the Maftar and the Haftar, because that's the Gemara. Hamafter Benavi, the one who gets the Haftar has to read from the Sefer Torah immediately before. Shouldn't be a pause. So Rabbi Kiveger did away with the practice. So on Tisha B'Av, in the morning we give three aliyahs, and the meaning is that we do say Chatzi Kaddish, and then the third, the one who got the third aliyah, says the Haftarah, Asaf Asifayim. The Mincha, we give three aliyahs in Baichal. And the minig used to be that they said Chatzi Kaddish, Rabbi Kiveger did away with it. So the one who got the third aliyah says Mafta right away. So that's a big problem in halacha. If Rabbi Kiveger did away with the Kaddish, with the Chatzi Kaddish, by Mincha, by a tiny sibur, so why didn't he do away with it by Shachris on Tisha B'Av? The exact same thing. The one who gets Shlishi says the Haftarah. So you have to say Terutzim, but it's a problem. The Pashtus is that should be the same. Pashtus is once he did away with the practice by Taneisim, by Mincha, he should have done away with it by Shachris, by Tisha B'Av as well. Rabbi Kiveger has many, many psokim. They write in the Svarim that his practice used to be for himself, he would be Machmer, but for others, he would always try to be Mekel. Usually an Adam Gadol tries to be Mekel for other people if it's within the halacha. They tell a famous incident that once a shaliach brought a get. Usually the husband gives a get directly to the wife, but the halacha provides for the possibility if the people don't talk to each other, they don't know how to face each other, or if they live in different cities or certainly in different countries. So rather than spend money to have the husband give the get to the wife face to face, so the Mishnayis, the Gemara learns that from Sukkim and Chumash, that the husband can send a shliach to give the get to the wife. So on one occasion, a shliach brought a get from another city, and the get was written slightly improper, in an improper fashion, in such a way that l'chatchila you really shouldn't use such a get. But for the other, the get would be kosher. So, under normal circumstances, one would have sent a letter to the community where they had sent the shliach. but they sent the shliach. They should write over the get and send it again with a new shliach all over again, because Hatzchila shouldn't write such a get. It's only kosher b'diyevet. So they had a famous case that Rabbi Kivega said that we paskin, Tosfos has a klal that shas hadchak b'diyevet dami. Shas hadchak b'yalal lechatchila, but it's usually only acceptable b'diyevet. So he said here it would be a chil Hashem, that it would become public knowledge that the Rabbanim in the other city made a mistake. If the mistake was such that even b'diyevet the get is no good, so it's no good, it's no good. But if b'diyevet it is good, that means the ikar din is good. That's why b'shas hadchak we would be make a leaving lahatchila. So Rabbi Kivega said, this is called b'shas hadchak, that the balabatim shouldn't make fun of the rabbanim, that the rabbanim made such a mistake. Rabbi Kivega has a famous chumrah in a get, which is not followed. Very few people follow the chumrah. Rabbi Kivega came up with a big chumrah, that when the husband folds up the get and he puts it in his wife's hand, so you have to fold it up so small in such a tiny size that the whole get should be in her hand. If part of the get is sticking above her hand or on the side, so that's not acceptable. You don't give the get like you give a diploma. And the wife holds part of the get in her hand and part sticks out and on the top of the hand and the bottom of the hand. The practice is you fold it up. So Rabbi Kivega insists that you have to fold it up so small that the entire get should be held in her hand. I say, the risk of having such a practice, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, is to do like that. But that's not the generally accepted opinion. Rabbi Kivega was a contemporary of the Nesibis. They lived in two different cities, but they corresponded with each other a lot. So Rabbi Kivega, among the many things that he wrote, he also wrote He'oris on the side of his Derech HaChaim Siddur. Derech HaChaim Siddur has all the Pesukei Halacha, like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, written by the author of the Nesibis. So Rabbi Kivega writes in the He'oris on the Derech HaChaim, he writes his personal practice is, when he wakes up in the morning, he washes Negel Vasa, then he goes around, he gets dressed, and he says Bichas HaTorah, he learns a little bit. Then the last time he washes his hands before he's about to daven shacharis, that's when he says the bracha on Tehillas Yadayim. Most people don't do like that. Most people do like it says in Derech HaChaim Siddur, that when you wash your hands the first time in the morning, you say on Tehillas Yadayim. Rabbi Kivega writes, his practice, his personal practice is not so. There's a different opinions what the bracha on Tehillas Yadayim in the morning is all about. So the Rambam's opinion is that the bracha on Tehillas Yadayim should be recited when one washes for shacharis, mincha, and for ma'ariv. We don't follow that opinion. We should really wash our hands before we daven mincha and wash our hands before we daven ma'ariv. But we don't go all the way like the Rambam to say that you say a bracha on the tefillah yadayim. But in shacharis, we are going to say the bracha. So Rabbi Kivega said, why not do like the Rambam? The last time you wash your hands before you're about to daven, that's when he said on the tefillah yadayim. Because the first time you wake up in the morning, you're going to tie your shoes, you're going to put on your clothes, you're going to touch different parts of your body. So it says he felt more correct is to say the bracha the last time you wash. We were talking before when we visited the community of Shafran, that after the Second World War, there was a Shafran Harav who lived in New York for years. He passed away probably over 50 years ago. About 50 years ago. It's interesting. The Rabbi Shafran, the one who came after the war to the United States, he lived in Brooklyn for a while. He was the son of the Dayan in Frankfurt. Rabbeinu Hirsch had a Dayan, Rab Gershon Posen, who went to university. Rabbeinu Hirsch, Rab Samson Rashal Hirsch, went to university, and his Dayan went to university. After Rabbeinu Hirsch passed away, so that this Dayan was the Dayan by Rab Shlomo Breuer also, the son-in-law of Rabbeinu Hirsch. And then Rab Shlomo Breuer passed away, so the Dayan was the one who paskin that the Kehillah has no right to appoint a different rav. There was a whole debate then with all machlekes, because Rab Shlomo Breuer left at Tzavah. He wanted his oldest son to take over the Rabbonis, and a lot of the Balabatim didn't like that idea. They had tightness against the oldest son of Rab Shlomo Breuer. Apparently he published a commentary on Shir HaShirim in German that had an attitude that's not like it says in the Gemara about the understanding of Shir HaShirim. So they didn't want him. So there's a whole debate there. So the Dayan, and they were going to have an election, they were going to have a vote on Sunday morning as to who should be the Rav and the Kehillah. So this Dayan, Gershon Posen, wrote a psak that the Balabatim are not allowed to vote for anybody else, that Rav Shlomo Breuer's son whom he singled out in the Tzavua, has the right to the Rabbanis. They're not allowed to pick anybody else. And that was a famous issue. So this Dayan Gershon Posen, Rabbi Moshe has a few children, the Dayan Posen from Frankfurt. So this Dayan Posen had many children. So this son, who was the Rabban Shafran later, he went to Hungary. He became a big follower of the Minchas Aluza from Minkach. Minchas Aluza was known to be extremely anti-Zionist, and he was not only was he opposed to the secular Zionists, he felt that the Mizrahi was worse than the secular Zionists, because Zionism is from all the 365 Averas, Zionism is the biggest Avera of all, and the Mizrahi is worse than the secular Zionists because they dress it up as if it's part of the Jewish religion, Zionism as if it's a mitzvah, and the Aguda is worse. That's what he has in his Judaism in Chasalosa. The Aguda is worse than the Mizrahi because they claim that they're anti-Zionistic, and they're really not. They're a bunch of fakers. That's what he has. He didn't live so long to see the Second World War, but during the First World War there was a discussion that maybe they should be going to Tainis because it was such a bad situation. So the Minchas Aluza has a tshuva about that. I think it's probably in the fifth chelik, the last chelik of the Minchas Aluza. So he says, Tainis Tzibur is only meaningful if there's going to be tshuvas at Tzibur. If you think there's a chance that the Tzibur is going to do tshuva. So he says, who's going to do tshuva? What? The secular Zionists. They're so bad, they're not going to do tshuva. The Mizrahi, they're worse than the secular Zionists. They're worse than the Mizrahi. We don't have to do tshuva. We didn't do any aver. That's what he writes in his tshuvas. He's opposed to having a Tainis Tzibur. And he writes also, there's a Muhammad, people are losing their lives. It's terrible. So they wanted to have a Tainis Tzibur, they wanted to have three little Rabbanei Shlom should stop the war. So he refers back to the diary of the Chasam Sefer it's available in print. The diary of the Chasam Sefer. The Chasam Sefer, when he lived in Presburg, there was some kind of a war. The city was under siege, some Austrian, Prussian, Hungarian war, whatever it was. Sure. I don't remember already. So the Chasam Sefer discusses the possibility of being mispallel that the war should end. So he says you're not allowed to because the Gemara says Melchamas are Aschalta de Geula. So Pasha Pshat in the Gemara is like Rashi said, Melchamas between the Jews and the Haravim, who will be the Balabas over Eretz Israel? And if the Jews win the war, so that's Aschalta de Geula. The Geula will come by first having Eretz Yisrael under Jewish control, and then you'll build a Beis Hamikdash. That's how a Geula develops. So the Chasam Sefer doesn't learn like Rashi. That's Pashim Shat Rashi. Chasam Sefer assumes that all wars in the world are an Aschal to the Geula. And he says, if the Ribbono Shel Olam is starting the process of Geula, you have no right to pray that he should stop it or to slow it down. So the Chasam Sefer wrote, you're not allowed to pray that the war should end because you're not allowed to slow down the Geula. So that's what the Minchas Aluza wrote about the First World War. Not only that you shouldn't be going to Tainis, because Tainis Tzibur is only if you can expect the possibility of the Tzibur doing tshuva, there's no chance, he says over here. But you shouldn't even be mispallel that the war should end, because if the war is going to slow down, it end means that you're slowing down the Geula. That's what he wrote. So this Shafin Arav was very influenced by the Minchas Aluza. So it was Yadua, he was opposed to all of the movements. He was opposed to the secular Zionism, to the religious Zionism, throughout. He was opposed to the Aguda, he was opposed to all of them. It's surprising that the Dayan from Frankfurt, Gershon Posen, he had a few children. So one of his children, who happens to be the great-grandfather of my son-in-law, one of the children, I think they say he had five different doctorates from five different universities. And he used to teach secular studies in the Yeshiva Chodesh High School in Tel Aviv. Posen. Dr. Posen. And the other one was so anti-everything. Such the same family. This one was opposed to everything. And the other son, like his father, the Dayan went to university. That was the last Rabban Shafran. That was the last Rabban Shafran. People assume as if Torah, the Gabi from the Hassam Sefer. So we mentioned earlier that in the 1600s, late 1600s, he had the Shaar Ephraim, who came from Vilna. He was the Talmud of the Chalkas Mechoikek and a Chover of the Shach. So when he ran away from the Chmelnytsky pogroms, he came to Eisenstadt. And then in the 1700s, he had the Pony Meiris, who was the grandson of the Shach system. So that was before the Chassam Sefer. But it is true that learning did pick up a lot after the Chassam Sefer. Chassam Sefer was born and brought up in Frankfurt. And his two rabbis mentioned were Amos Nadler and the author of the Haflor, Rav Pinchas Horowitz. And he writes in his Shulis that Amos Nadler was a Kohen and the Haflor was a Levi. By the Frankfurt, they have the meaning that when they do Chanan Yontif, so the Levim wash the Kohanim's hands in front of the shul, and then they go to the back of the shul, or outside of the shul. They have a washing stand on either side of the chasen, on the right side, on the left side, and the Kohanim stand there, and the Levim wash their hands. So he writes in the Shulis what a beautiful sight it was to see the way the Rav in the shul, the Afloa, Levi would wash the hands of Rav Nasnadler with such respect. They were mechabed each other. He writes in his different shuvas, different things that he remembers seeing. He writes the way the menorah would be situated in shul, in Frankfurt, the different menhagim, what he'd put the menorah in a horizontal direction, a vertical direction. So he writes the way they have it in Frankfurt, what the minhag always was. They have in the history books that when the Chassam Sefer was bar mitzvah, so his father was a religious balabas, but not that learned. So the bar mitzvah bacher prepared his own shtigl Torah. So he said over a dry Torah from his great grandfather, in one of the svarim, Koisis Yeshuas. Yeshuas is Seder Nezikin. And what is it? Techa Koisis Yeshuas Chachmas Vadas, the Gemara says, represents the Shisha Sidre Nishma. So Yeshuas corresponds to Nezikin. So an Elta Zeta of his, the Marshal Shach, I think, wrote a chibra on the Zikin, that's called Koisis, there's a Koisis Shuas, and a Kosos Yeshuas. So he said over something for the Elta Zeta, and he ripped it apart, explained why it's wrong, and he gave a different teretz on the kasha. So his father was a balabas, he didn't know whether the little kid knew what he was talking about or not. So he slapped him in public at his bar mitzvah party, and he said, how do you have the chutzpah? A little kid, how do you have the chutzpah to disagree with Elta Zeta? So Amnos Nadler said to the father, why are you slapping him? The kid is right and Elta Zeta is wrong. So he convinced the 13-year-old boy that he should leave his parents' home. He said, if you're going to stay by your parents, anytime you're going to ask Akasha and Rashi and Taisus and the Rambam, your father's going to slap you. Chutzuf, what right do you have to ask Kashas? But that's the only way a person grows in learning. You have to ask with chutzpah. You have to always ask with chutzpah. And then, the Gemara says, after you finish learning, then you put away the chutzpah and you have derech eretz for all of Israel. So he convinced the young boy, it's a very strange piece of Jewish history. He convinced the Chassam Sofer when he was just 13, he should leave his parents' home. And he stayed by him, he stayed by the Rebbe. It's not that he had in mind he should marry his daughter. He didn't marry his daughter. They weren't wasn't the right age. But he left his parents home and he learned Rav Nos Nadler. And then Rav Nos Nadler was always an original thinker. He always did things differently. They had a Sephardi visiting in Frankfurt. Rav Nadler heard the way he was pronouncing Hebrew, so he decided that's the more correct way to pronounce Hebrew. So instead of davening Nusach Havara like Yekis, he lived in Frankfurt. He was davening like the Havara of the Sephardim, like in Eretz Yisrael. So that, I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and they chased the Balabat and chased him out of town. So when he left, Rav Nos Nadler was chased out of Frankfurt because he was Mishanu, all the Mechogim, everything he did differently. So the Chassam Sofer, as a teenager, went along with him on everything. And then there was a period of time that Rav Nos Nadler was staying on the outskirts of the city, Prague, and that Yehuda was the Rav of Prague. So the Chassam Sofer, as a teenager, was delivering letters back and forth between his Rebbe Rav Nos Nadler, who was on the other side of the river, and the Rebbe Yehuda, who was inside Prague. There's a river there on the edge of the city. Yeah. So he was very kofef to his Rebbe. They have, we mentioned there's a Sefer Chutam Shulosh, that's the official biography. Chassam Sofer, then the second is the Chassam Sofer, and the third is the Ksav Sofer. Chassam Sofer had several sons, so one of the sons who took over the Rabbanus in Presburg is the one who wrote the Chuvah's Ksav Sofer. So one of the sons of the Ksav Sofer wrote this biography, and it has the official stories and the family version of the stories. So one of the stories that he has in the book goes as follows. That's where they have the other story, that when the children went to visit the Rebbe Gevegas, and the Chassam Sofer said, you should watch the Hasidus and the Preshes, and then they asked, why not the Torah? So that's in the Chutam Shulash. So they have the following story there. The Chassam Sofer used to send them shilas from all over Europe. So he used to write shuvas, and he used to leave it on the table, and he have his son, the Chassam Sofer, would read over the shuvah and would send it, would mail it to the person who sent the shilas. So if the son didn't think the tshuva was up to par, so he didn't have the chutzpah to tell the father he doesn't agree, he would just leave the tshuva on the table and he wouldn't mail it, and then the father would ask him, "Why? How come you didn't send it in the mail?" So on one occasion, this is what they have in the Chutam Shulchan, on one occasion, the son left the tshuva on the table a week. The father said, "How come you didn't mail it?" So the son said, "Because the one who sent the shilah is a very big Talmud Chacham, and in your tshuva, he asked to a shaila, and you didn't really bring a strong raya. You said if the Gemara would appear like this way, but the guy's a very big Talmud Chacham, so you should really give a stronger tshuva." So the Chassam Sofer told him, "You should realize that in every generation, Min HaShemayim, they give the key to Psak, the one person in generation, and he felt that in his generation, he was the one to whom the Mafteach HaPsak was given. And his tshuvas are really based on his instinctive, intuitive feeling." That's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say also, when you have a big Adam Gadol is presented with a shaila, so right away he has an intuition, what he thinks the din is. Then he looks up in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch to see whether it's right or wrong. But they basically paskin based on their intuition. I don't know Ruach HaKodesh, but because they have such a knowledge of Kol HaTorah Kulo, so they can feel intuitively what the thing should be. So he said, "By me, the main psak is my intuitive feeling, and that my feeling is this way. So I don't need any rayas." That's a famous story that he has. We have the practice. The Chassam Sofer came up with a fantastic chumrah that we have the practice to spend another $250,000 to be machlam for whenever you build a mikveh. We always assume that when you open up the faucet and the tap water comes out, that the pipes may have been constructed in such a way that the water may be mayim she'uvim. Water that was contained in a kli is not acceptable for a mikvah. It's a question whether it's a din d'oraisa, din d'rabbanan, but that's not halacha. Mayim she'uvim is no good. So the Mishnayos say that just like if you have water that's tamei, if you do a hashokah, if you take a bottle of water and the water's tamei, and you submerge the bottle under the mikveh, and the bottle is open on top, and then the water in the bottle connects with the water in the mikveh. It only works if it's water. If it's some other beverage, it doesn't work. So if the water in the bottle, which is tamei, connects with the water of the mikveh, that's called hashokah, and the tamei dika water becomes tahar. So the Mishnah, you say that the same is true regarding mayim she'uvim. If you have a mikveh that's mayim she'uvim, and you make a hashokah with a kosher a mikveh, mayim k'sherim, so you're allowed to be toivel in the mayim shuvim as well. So the Chassam Sofer came up with a fantastic chumrah that costs all the Jewish communities now, that's generally accepted, everybody does this chumrah. Costs the Jewish communities a big chunk of money every time, costs another $250,000. He had a chiddush that hashoka works. The Gemara says, why does hashoka work? Tefillah, only four categories of things are mekabel tuma, ad mekelim, ochlam, and mashkim. And the two ad mekelim have tefillah b'mikveh, and ochlam and mashkim do not have tefillah b'mikveh. So if you have water that's tamei, then you tevel the water in the mikveh, how can it become tahor? But the water is mashkim, and ochlam and mashkim, there's no tefillah b'mikveh. So Rashi always writes, every time the Gemara speaks about hashoka, Rashi goes through this whole arichas. Rashi says that when you connect the tomidika water with the water in the mikveh, it's a din of zriya. Let's say if I have a potato that was makabel tuma, and I plant it in the ground and it takes root. So once the thing is growing from the ground, so the halacha says that the zriya is betahir. If the thing is b'chuba, if you have apples growing on a tree, tummy touches the apple, so they're not mekabel tuma. So not only is mechuber, if it's growing on a tree, growing from the ground, not only is it not mekabel tuma, even if it already was tuma, tummy, and you plant it in the ground and it takes root, so the tuma disappears. So there's a pasuk that reads in Navi, that when you connect water with water that's on the ground, that's considered tzriya. So if you have tamidik of water and you pour it into a mikveh, that's considered as if it's growing from the ground, even though the water is not, it's not growing. Pasuk says in Navi, that's considered tzriya. So the Chasam Sefer came up with the following chumra. If you want to plant a potato in the ground, so you have to have ofrim ma'ilam ilamato on all the four sides, northeast, southwest, on top and on the bottom, on all six directions. You have to have ofrim to plant something. So he came up with the chumra that the way we do hashoke, you have one bore full of water, tap water. That's where concern that maybe ma'im shuvim. Then you have another bore that's the kosher and mikvah. You have a pipe that connects in between. So it says all over in the Mishnayos that that's called hashoke. So the Chasam Sefer came up with the chumra that's not acceptable. Since Hashok has to work with Dinsriya, so you have to have the tap water should be coming from a hose into the middle of the bore. You have a whole mikveh full of water, and then the Maim Shuvim, or the Maim Tmeim, has to come in the middle. So you have Maim Ksherim on top and on bottom and all the four sides. So that's a big chumrah, of course, fortunately. Moshe Feinstein writes in his Sefer, the Chasam Sefer never meant to say that the normal kind of hashok is not acceptable. That's beferish in the Mishnayos. So we don't exactly understand what the Chasam Sefer mean over here. It is beferish, not like the Chasam Sefer. But that's what they usually machman out, that all the mikvahs they make like that, they do smear. That we have followed, we do follow the Chasam Sefer in that form, even though we don't really understand it, because it's against all the Mishnayos. Mishnah says you have one mikveh next to the other, it is considered hashok. In the middle 1800s, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher, Tira Tzvi, is a kibbutz in Eretz that's named after Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher. He was one of the religious Zionist leaders, you may say. Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher had this dream that we should go build a Beis HaMikdash. He didn't realize that it's not Shaykh. That there's, he never visited Eretz, didn't know that there's a mosque over there. It's not Shaykh. So he said we should go ahead and build a Beis HaMikdash and bring the korbanos. There's no din that you have to wait till Moshiach comes to build a Beis HaMikdash or to bring korbanos. So he wrote a whole sefer, which was an open letter to Baron Rothschild, encouraging Rothschild that he should support, should put up the money to build the Beis HaMikdash. So in this essay that he wrote, he has to deal with all the issues, either Karan Matome, how can there be Makam Karbonis, and so on and so forth. What are you doing in Big Dekuna, and so on, all the issues. So one of the issues is that you have to have Kohanim Miyuchasim. The Psukim say in Ezra that when they came back after the 7 years of Golus Babel, so many of the people assumed that they were Kohanim because they knew their fathers used to duch and their grandfather got the first aliyah. They used to eat the challah v'chutzlaretz and they used to duch, and so that's called Kohani Chazaka. And some of them had a ksav yichas where it recorded who their father was, their grandfather, their great grandfather, all the way back to someone who had stood in the Bais Rishon, was Bakru Karbonis. And they wrote each generation who they married, that the woman was Kshera Lekuna, that they didn't marry any of the Nashim of Psulas Lekuna. So that's called Kohanim Miyuchasim. So the Pasuk says in Ezra, the Mark Subas talks about it, that there's a requirement you can only be Makar Karbonis if you're Kohanim Miyuchas. If you're just Kohanim Chazak, you can't be Makar Karbonis. So how to get around that? In the 1800s, there simply were not enough Kohanim Miyuchasim to run a Beis HaMikdash. So Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher came up with a Chiddush. That requirement for Kohanim Miyuchasim was only a Chumra Midrabbanan that was introduced by Ezra. And it's self-understood that the Chumra only has to be observed if you'll be able to run a Beis HaMikdash with the Chumra. But if that Chumra will make it impossible to run a Beis HaMikdash, so the Chachamim never meant that Kedei Kach. Kohanim Miyuchasim Abari Kohanim. For so many generations before Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher, it was assumed that Kohani Chazoke were only Safikar. Kohen Miyuchas is a Vade Kohen. Kohani Chazoke are a Safikar. One, I know my grandfather Duchen, my great grandfather, they're all Duchen. So that's only Kohani Chazoke. So it's assumed that's only a Safikar, not a Vade Kohen. So Rav Tzvish Kalisha says, not true. Kohani Chazoke are Vade Kohanim. And it's only a Chumra mid the Rabbanon that you shouldn't permit them to be Makar of Kohanis. And if in our generation, in the 1860s, if that will mean that we simply won't be able to be Makar of Kohanis, then you don't have to observe the Chumra mid the Rabbanon. So, Tzvi Ishkalosha was a Talmud of Rabbi Kivega. So he sent his kuntres to Rabbi Kivega, who approved. He agreed. Then Rabbi Kivega sent it to his son-in-law, the Chasam Sofer, who also agreed. So from that time on, that was a major change in halacha. From that time on, it was assumed, because Rabbi Kivega, the Chasam Sofer, both approved of this position of Rabbi Tzvi Hirshkalusha. From that time on, it is assumed that the Kohani Chazoke, Avad HaKohanim, it's only a Chumrah mid the Rabbanan, that we shouldn't let them be Makar of Korbanos. It's famous from the Chuvas of the Chasam Sofer. The Kivega was very optimistic. A little bit on the naive side, very optimistic. So he corresponded with the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer was brought up in Frankfurt, so he knew the Rothschild family from Frankfurt. So he wanted his son-in-law, the Chasam Sofer, should encourage Rothschild. Rothschild was an extremely wealthy banker. He used to lend money to all the kings and all the governments in the world. So he should, the Chasam Sofer should ask Rothschild to pressure the Mufti in Yerushalayim to allow the Jews to make a Mizbech and to bring Karban Pesach and Erev Pesach in the afternoon. So the Chasam Sofer sends back a letter to him, my dear, beloved father-in-law, you don't realize what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. There's a mosque over there, and the Mufti is such a Sinai Israel. He'll never give permission. He doesn't allow B'nai Yisrael to walk anywhere near the Makam HaMikdash. There's nothing to discuss. So that's one of the famous letters of the Chasam Sofer to his father-in-law. Common practice in many parts of Europe is, let's say a boy is born and he needs a tigger ben, and sometimes the father is not Jewish. Let's say a non-Jewish man marries a Jewish woman. They have a bchor. So the bchor needs tigger ben, but the father is not Jewish, he can't do the tigger ben. So the Ramah says in Shulchan Aruch, tigger ben cannot be done by anybody else, either by the father or by the child when the child grows bar mitzvah. Not like a bris milah. If the father didn't do the bris on the child, then the bezdin or someone else should do the bris milah. And in the same daf in the Gemara, it says pinyan ben is either done by the father or done by the child when he grows up. And no one else, it sounds from the Gemara, no one else can do it. So the Shach, in his commentary on Yerideya, is very unhappy with that psak and the Ramah. Ramah quotes it from a Rivosh, and he says it's not correct. And the Vilna Gaon says, look in the Shach, he thinks the Shach is right. So the minig in Lithuania was, that's what they record, the Aruch HaShulchan and others say like that. They remember the minig in Lithuania was that if there was a child who needed pinyan ben, and the child was a yosim, the father was not alive, or the father wasn't religious, or the father wasn't Jewish, whatever the story is. So the bezdin would do the pinyan ben. They followed the Shach and the Vilna Gaon, and that's the end. But in many parts of Europe, in Hungary and Galicia, they were very kafuf to the Chasam Sofer. So they would do pinyan aben twice. They would do the bezdin would do pinyan aben on the 31st day, b'li brocha, and then the child would repeat the pinyan aben again, b'li brocha, after he would become bar mitzvah. Because he really shouldn't wait 13 years if he can do it now. That practice was instituted by the Chasam Sofer, that you do the pinyan aben twice. They have sometimes, well, these people probably died out already. I remember there used to be a rabbi who lived in Washington Heights, who grew up in Pressburg as a young child. He wasn't there at the times of the Chasam Sofer. So he was there in the early first half of the 1800s. But he remembered as a child that part of the Erev that they had in Pressburg, so they said, this is where the Chasam Sofer changed the Erev. That when the Chasam Sofer first came to town, he was first Rav in Mattersdorf, then later on he became the Rav in Pressburg. the first time he went around and checked the Erev. So he was upset about a certain part of the Erev. So he said, who told him they can make an Erev like this? It was a Churi HaKoisel. Churi HaKoisel means you have the pole of the Erev. You have to have a wire or a string going from on top of one pole to on top of another pole. So the pole of the Erev has to be contiguous with the Rishus HaYochid that you're enclosing. Sometimes if you make the string is going to be wider than the gap, and the pole is not going to be touching the area that's enclosed. Let's say you have an area that has U-shaped area, and then you make a long wire on the fourth side, and the two poles are nowhere near. It's a foot to the right of the area and a foot to the left of the area, but if the poles are not, neither of the poles are touching the area enclosed. That's called Achuri HaKoisel. Some sofer said, who approved this? So they said the previous rabbi approved it. That was who was the previous rabbi? Meshulam Igra was the previous rabbi. So the Chassam Sofer said, oh, he approved it. You can realize he was a big person. But then it's Yodua that the Chassam Sofer changed it, that he insisted that they should change it. So the Chazon Ish asks, he doesn't understand what happened over here. Chassam Sofer changed his mind twice. When he first saw the Erev, so he thought his instinctive reaction was, it's not acceptable, it's no good. He said, who made the Erev like this? So he told the previous rabbi, so he said, okay. So why did he change it later on? So the Pashta says he didn't change his mind twice. He never changed his mind. He held that it's no good. So he was going to have to tell about them. They can't carry in the air. So he said, who approved this air? So he said, Reb Shulam Igra. So he said, okay, he's entitled to an opinion, even though I disagree with him. And the klal is, whenever there's a suffix in Erevin, you have a right to go to Kula. So the Chassam Sofer himself probably didn't carry. And he told his family not to carry in the Erev, because he held that it's no good. But he's not mechuyev to tell the Balabatim that it's no good. They have the right, kedayu, listen, they have the right to rely on the previous rabbi. But after a couple of years went by, it's no longer known as Reb Shulam Igra's Erev. It's known as Chassam Sofer's Erev. He was the rabbi there in the shul, and the previous rabbi passed away already. So then he had to change it, because the Balabatim have to follow all of his psukim. So the Pashto says that the Chassam Sofer never changed his mind. They tell a famous story how he got the position. When Meshulam Igra was on his deathbed, so he kept on mumbling. He wishes that Reb Meir would be right. He wishes that Allah would be like Reb Meir. And then he passed away. So when they interviewed candidates for the rabbinical position in Presburg, so they met with them and he spoke about whatever, women's prayer groups, women's hakovim, whatever issues they had that they discussed with the candidates for the rabbinate. And then they told him, Reb Shulam Igra said, all the candidates said, Reb Shulam Igra said, he wishes that Reb Meir would be right. Do you know what he's talking about? So everybody came up with a wild interpretation. So the Chassam Sofer gave the best interpretation. So they say that's what clinched the job for him. He said, the Gemara says, Rov gosesim lemisa. Most people who are in a state of gesisa are going to die. But there's a miut gosesim lechayim. And Reb Meir holds chashin lemiuta. Reb Meir holds we shouldn't always follow Rov. So he was mumbling. He wishes Reb Meir would be right. Chashin lemiuta, even though he's a gosses, he wishes that the Rov gosesim lemisa shouldn't happen on him. So the Balabatim thought that was probably what Reb Shulam Igra meant. So that's how they say. That's how he got the job. Of course, the Chassam Sofer was very involved in fighting reform. But the big fight, the bigger fight began after he passed away, and his son, Chassam Sofer, and mainly the Maramshik, had to take over the battle. They write in the history books that the Chassam Sofer encouraged his Talmidim, when they take a rabbinical position, they should only accept the Rabbanus on the condition that the Balabatim and the community support a yeshiva. So that's why after all the Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer who went into Rabbanus, each one insisted, each one had a little yeshiva in his village. So that's why there was a great upsurge in Limud HaTorah after the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer has a famous tshuva about Lag BaOmer. He says he heard that in Eretz Yisrael and Meirona Lag BaOmer make bonfires and they sing and they dance and they make a gansa yontif and they give the chalaka, they give the haircut to the children who are 3 years old. And he writes, If they would listen to me, he would do away with Lag BaOmer the way it's celebrated in Meirom. We celebrate Lag BaOmer all over the world. We just leave our Tachnun. So leaving our Tachnun, you didn't really make it into a Yontif. There's a machloikis, what's the story with Tachnun? So we really follow the opinion of the Kohenim against the Rambam. That Tachnun is optional. Because a lot of times we leave our Tachnun, we don't really have such a good reason why. So we follow the opinion of the Tur B'Shem HaGoyim that Tachnun is a Rishus. So it's a Rebbe's Ayotzeit or something. So we leave our Tachnun. So that we leave our Tachnun on like Baimer, we didn't make it into a Yantar. But if you're going to have, let's say Lubavitch has a big parade on like Baimer, and in Meiron they have bonfires and dancing and singing and haircuts and everything, they make it into a Yantar. So he writes, if they would listen to him, he would abolish it, because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah has rules and regulations when you're allowed to institute a new yontif. So the Gemara says that's called Megillas Tainis. During the period of the second Beis Hamikdash, every month in Gdanishtik was another yontif. The over 30 Yomim Tovim that they added on Chanukah and Purim were two of the many Yomim Tovim of Megillas Tainis. And the Gemara says after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, all of these Yomim Tovim became bottle, with the two exceptions of Chanukah and Purim. And then the Gemara explains why. Why did they all become bottle? Because the common denominator of all the Yomim Tovim is you only have a right to institute a new Yom Tov if it has something to do with the Beis Hamikdash. You celebrate when you build the Beis Hamikdash, when you save the Beis Hamikdash from destruction, when the Chashmonaim would be victorious in battle. So they made a yontif every time. So what do you mean? That's the halacha. Every time the Jewish army is victorious, you better make a yontif. No, you make a sudas oidoy, you thank the Rebbeinu Shlom. You make a yontif. The Chashmonaim had a Beis Hamikdash, and when they were victorious in battle, they saved the Beis Hamikdash from destruction or from being defiled. In Chanukah, they rededicated the Beis Hamikdash and made a new mizbech and made a new menorah. So whenever the Gemara quotes sections from the Megillas Tainis, whenever the Hakrovas HaKrabonis is approved, whenever the institution of the Kuhuna Gedoyla is approved, whatever the institution of the Sanhedrin is approved, Sanhedrin is an institution of the Beis Hamikdash, and has to meet in the Beis Hamikdash. So you only have a right to introduce a new Yontif with Rabbanon if it has something to do with building the Beis Hamikdash, protecting, defending the Beis Hamikdash, improving the structure, major donations were given, Yom Nicanor, when the gates that Nicanor sent, they sank in the Mediterranean, and they miraculously floated back up again on the dry land, and they put them on the door. They used the doors in the Beis Hamikdash. So all the Yom Tovim are beginning to start tomorrow, so that's what they all have in common. So that's what the Chasam Sefer says, like, Moimer, fine, it's the yard side of Rav Shem, but whatever else it is, whatever happened, but it has nothing to do with the Beis Hamikdash. That's what he writes in the first Shuvah. The second Shuvah, he backs out all the Shuvahs on dates. But the original Shuvah, that's what he writes. If it would be up to him, he would do away with the Yontif of Megillas Tainis the way it was being celebrated there in Meiron. It's Yodua, when they reformed, before they started the whole Neologan, that was later after the Chassam, but when the reform movement first began, so they started changing little things here and there. They changed the davening, instead of davening in Hebrew, so they davened in German. And that says from Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to. The only thing is they didn't consult the Goyim, and the Goyim are such a major change. It says in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't daven in the vernacular in the Sfas HaMedina if you're davening the Yechidus. Because a Yochid who davens has to have the Malachim to present the prayers to the Rebbeinu Shlom. But if you daven the Tzibur, so the Pasuk says, Henkel Kapir Lo Yimos, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mois B'Tfilos HaRabim. So the tefillahs go directly to the Rebbeinu Shlom. So you don't need the malachim to present it. So you can even daven in the vernacular. So strictly speaking, that's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara. So that's why they didn't ask, they didn't consult, but they knew they weren't the Gedoli Hador. They were big Tamei Chachamim. They didn't consult the Gedoli Hador. They felt they have a right to follow the Shulchan Aruch. Also it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you have a Sheva Brochus on Shabbos, the minig hamokim is that you always have music at a Sheva Brochus. So you're permitted to ask a Nochri to play music on Shabbos, because that's the shoes go Makam Mitzvah. They ask a Nochri to do an Isser de Rabbanan, but Makam Mitzvah is Buddha. So that's why they originally introduced, in the new shul, they had a non-Jew play the organ in the synagogue to enhance the davening. That's based on what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that shoes go Makam Mitzvah. is Chadosh Osim Min HaTorah. Chadosh itself, he didn't paskin Osim. Chadosh means whatever grain you plant, wheat, barley, oats, and so on, whatever you plant after Pesach, you're not allowed to eat till it comes next Chalamot Pesach. That's the Yisra Chadosh. So Chadosh itself, he was Mekel, but he used this expression as a Melitza, Chadosh Osim Min HaTorah. Chadosh Osim Min HaTorah B'chomot. You're not allowed to change anything. That's a famous line from the Chasam Sofer in his Tshuvas, that the Chodesh Osim Min HaTorah. Chasam Sofer is known for his psak. It's quoted by the commentaries on the side of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, that to wait 6 hours is only a minig. To wait 1 hour after fleshing, between flesh and milchiks, could be a din de rabbanon. That's based on the Zohar, not to eat meat and milk, the shaita chota, within an hour. But the 6 hours, that's b'feirush in word, that's only a minute. So the Chasam Sofer said, in order to violate a din de rabbanon, you have to be a chole, at least a chole shein b'sakana. So in order to be able to eat milchiks within 1 hour after fleshiks, you have to be a chole shein b'sakana. Chole shein b'sakana means a person has a condition that prevents him from functioning normally. But as far as waiting more than 1 hour, to wait 6 hours, if you have slight ache and pain, that's enough to be mekel. And minstar a little bit, minstar is already mutar. That's quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva Yeridei, the name of the Chasam Sofer. Recently, Harav Aaron Lichtenstein passed away, so it was yodua that he used to give a shiur every year on Leil Yom Kippur. After Meirav, after all the slichas on Leil Yom Kippur, it was late in the middle of the night in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. We'd always give a shiur on Seder Avodah. So the quote from the Chasam Sofer's practice was, he gave a shiur every single day of the year. On Yom Kippur, he gave a shiur on Seder Avodah, Shabbos Yontav, every day, only Tisha B'Av. Because Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to learn Torah. And you're not supposed, even to give a shiur in Hilchos Avelos is not allowed. Chasam Sofer explains why. But every single day he gave a shiur, on Yom Kippur, he gave the shiur on Seder Avodah. Only Tisha B'Av was the one exception to the rule. Sofer has a lot of tshuvas that became, not all of his tshuvas have been accepted, not all of them are so popular, but a lot of them have become very, very popular. He has one tshuva where he writes that some people started a new minig in the shuls, that if they're davening nusach ari in the shul, so the Baal Tefillah cannot wear any silk clothing. There's a contradiction between wearing silk clothing and davening nusach ari. So he says that this is Kahakta Chainik. There's no such thing al Pikabola. It's like Charish Bishorva Hamor Yachtov. They're blending together things that don't blend together. He says if you want to introduce a new minig, you have to be a big Talmud Chochem to know that the minig makes sense. He said this doesn't make any sense at all. If you daven Nusachari, you shouldn't be able to wear silk clothing. So he says, my Rebbe of Nos Nadler was a big Talmud Chochem, and he knew how to make Minhogim. So he quotes one of the Minhagim of his Rebbe, Rav Nos Nadler, was Machmer HaChadosh, that whatever grain was planted after Pesach, even the Chutz Lord, even far away from Eretz Yisrael, we're usually Mekel on that. Most people are Mekel on the Chodosh for various reasons. But his Rebbe was Machmer, Rav Nos Nadler was Machmer. So Rav Nos Nadler had introduced the minig that you shouldn't give an aliyah, you shouldn't give that aliyah to a person who eats Chodosh, the pasuk that says, don't give that aliyah to a person who violates the Yisra Chodesh. Well, let's say a person is on a Shema Shabbos, so you can give him an aliyah, but don't give him the aliyah about Shema Shabbos and make a joke out of the Torah. The person runs around with other people's wives, so don't give him the aliyah that says Loisinov. Don't give him that if he's a ganav, if he cheats in business, so don't give him the aliyah that he violates, he makes a joke out of the Torah. He said that was one of the various minhagim that his Rebbe introduced. He writes one of the other tshuvas. It's also a common practice based on what he says. He says his Rebbe Rav Nos Nadler was a kohen. He says he remembers he once attended a tikkun event. He was always with his Rebbe. He says he knew all of the hanhagas. He says lo zazel yadi mitoch yada all the time. He knew everything that his Rebbe did. He was there all the time for years. He says he was once there when his rabbi participated in a Binyan Ben, and the baby was not there. Usually you have the baby there. mother with the baby are in one city, the father's in a different city. So the father does the pinyan on that, not in the presence of the baby. There's no halacha that says the baby has to be there. It says he was once there, and his Rebbe Rav Nachman Adler did the pinyan on that. Shalom b'racha chusatina. So he said, that's the halacha. Yeah, that has been accepted. Many, many of the positions of the Chasam Sofer have been accepted. Don't follow everything. One of his famous tshuvas is that on a tainis tzibur there's a takanas chachamim that you have to learn kriyas of Torah. So even if you don't have six misanim, even if you don't have people of fiesta, it's a takana you learn kriyas of Torah. So the common practice is not like the Chasam Sofer. We insist either you have to have 10 people of fiesta, or at least you have to have 6 people of fiesta. But we don't follow the Chasam Sofer. But many, many of his psukim have been accepted. I agree with the Chasam Sofer. There were big goyim and a lot of things picked up tremendously because he insisted all of his talmidim should have as a clause in the Ksav Rabbanus that the Balabatim should